Tom, are you good at go-karts?
Yeah, I am. Thank you very much. Unlike what my friend Jason Strudwick said there, I've got a lead foot on the kart track, boys.
Really? Well, we might have to have a little competition later on, a drive one night.
Absolutely. It'd
be fun.
Apparently I didn't get the email for this invite. Connor brought it up in the break there, and I don't have access to my Bell account because I haven't been to the studio in like 6 months, and a little bit hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we didn't need any more pylons. We need people to speed.
Ouch.
Well, because basically, here's how I can sum it up best.
Here we go.
Connor Halley was the New York Islanders while Struds and I were Tampa Bay. Oh. It was basically like just running roughshod. Like that was a full-blown ass-kicking by the Tampa Bay Lightning in Game 1.
Was it ever? Poor Connor is on the brunt end of this. But if he was struggling on the – I mean, he admitted it, and he had a tough day. But I don't know if – did he fly in the day before and had an extra day of travel? And unlike the Tampa Bay Lightning, but guys, I mean, from the outset last night, that was something else. Watching Tampa yesterday in person – seeing the power that they had. I was surprised, though, with the Islanders, too. I thought they'd have a little more gusto, but that one Kucherov play that he scored on, it just looked like he was playing street hockey when you were a kid and you could do whatever you want, you know, with either one of the street hockey balls or a tennis ball, and you're just dominating the neighborhood kids. That's what that goal looked like to me, at least.
Yeah, it was, you know, when you're in the zone and everything's going your way, you can tilt your stick and chip it over like that, right? Like, how many times have we ever seen, I've never seen another player do that in the NHL, like, you know, to be honest. So you're in the zone, and yeah, he's highly skilled, but you're feeling it, man. And he can snap that thing up. But, you know, how much do you chalk up to the fact that the Islanders had a tough game set, or, you know, it's a tough seven-game series, had a fly, they get here, and they're, you know, just not quite ready. And how much of a bounce back do you think there is in the mighty Islanders?
Well, they always seem to have an answer in this postseason. And you know, Barry Trotz has them playing well defensively, and they're big and they're strong, and they still have skill, and it's just this, like, really good mix. The goaltending has been solid for them, not over the top or crazy good or anything, but enough to give them a chance to win on most nights. So I do think the travel had a factor, and talking from the reporters that have come out from the Eastern Conference and were at the games in Toronto, they said that this was the worst game the Isles had played since, I think they said, Game 2 of the Philly series, where they were just completely out of it, managed to claw their way back in late, and then just ended up losing in OT. It was the same type of game where they were flat, and I would think that, you know, maybe the disruption, you get into such a groove of being in one place, and those two teams were in Toronto for a month and a bit, and then, you know, you come over here, you get a practice in, and then you're into the game, and maybe that affected them a little bit. I expect them to be better tomorrow when they play game two, but it just, to me, watching the Lightning, it's almost like they're flexing their muscles going, all right, well, we're not looking past the Islanders, but we're ramping up, we're gearing up, we're pedal to the metal here, and it's crazy to think. I mean, I suppose not really that crazy to think, given the amount of talent and experience that they have, that they're doing it without a guy like Stamkos.
What about as far as the play of Hedman? I mean, he's long been one of my favorite D, but I just see him. I feel like he's just completely dominating out there right now.
It was, you know, you watch him on TV, Struddy, and you see the plays he makes. You see how overpowering he can be. He's a huge dude. He's strong. He's smooth. Skates well. And then to see him in person and to see just the control that he has over the game, especially when he's on the ice, is phenomenal. And I don't know if it's like prime Chara-esque. Maybe he's a bit smoother than what Chara was in his prime, but he just owns. It's unbelievable how smooth he is. And I really like Sergachev and watching him and how he's developing as well. But, man, when Edmund's on the ice, that's tough sledding if you're an offensive player.
Tom Cazzola joins us, and I'm the sports leader, TSN 1260. Tommy, of course, lots of other stuff happening outside of the NHL playoffs. And I know you're a big golf guy, but you just look at Dustin Johnson right now. My goodness, this guy is on fight. Like, that maybe might be one of the best four-week stretches of any golfer that I can think of in a long time.
DJ, yeah, the big win. This guy, Obviously, he's been at the top of the world rankings for what, the last decade or so, and he's dialed in. Looks like he's found his groove, and it's just ramping up, going into the late Masters in November. And it was funny, I was watching Ty Gretzky's stuff on Instagram, and their power went out wherever they were staying, so they had to go on their phones and watch DJ finish up the round to win the championship. And it's just not surprising to see how dominant he is and how dialed in he is, just given how good he has been for a long time, but just to see the other stories around it, and now to kind of see the family aspect of it, having gotten to know Ty a little bit and seeing how close they are to DJ. And I'm not surprised whatsoever that, you know, he wants to prove to people that he can win in pressure moments, and he can win the big one, especially after what did he blow on 18? That huge, was that the PGA Championship a few years ago, where he had that putt he burned, and he wants to prove that that's an outlier, and you could tell that passion burns strong, and he's pedal to the metal as well, as we're talking motorsports type of lingo here, because you guys were on the track today and I wasn't, but whatevs. But yeah, he's hitting his peak, man. He's in his prime, and he's going to dominate. And it's kind of surprising to see some of the others falling off a little bit, but he's got to be one of the bets to cap this season out at the top.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. Now, an interesting story about Major Leagues of Baseball and their structure for the pumped-in crowd noise basically comes in the form of 30 different iPads, one for each team, loaded with various crowd reactions. So there's a little and tapping and scrolling. You go all the way through it, and that's how they've set it up for baseball. And it's interesting to note, you know, early reports based from Toronto to Edmonton is that Toronto had more continuous noise, where, and I mentioned it, Tom, that in Edmonton it was almost too quiet. And I wonder if now that you'll see those teams, hey, you know what, guys, you got to at least do what they were doing in Toronto and having more noise.
That was one of the first things that some of the Eastern media that came out here from Toronto were saying. They're like, wow, it's really quiet with that background crowd noise. And baseball is interesting how they found a way. They did the same thing like the NHL has done. They went to their officially licensed video game. They did MLB The Show, and they got their crowd noise and certain, like if it's a hard hit ball and it's a rope, but you don't know if it's going to hit the wall or, you know, fly out of the park and for a home run. Like, they have the difference of variances in terms of the reaction. And the NHL, you can hear it when we're at those games, Greg's. There's like that low hum a little bit.
Yep.
But, and then when there's a big hit, obviously they must have the same type of thing where there's a button you hit and you go, okay, this is hit, or this is big save, whatever. But the other thing, the comment I've been hearing from the media that have come in from Toronto is, we get to hear way more from the benches in terms of chatter, and it has been absolutely phenomenal to hear some of the exchanges. Game 7, Canucks Golden Knights, like, they were calling Jake Virtanen and Pat Maroon. They were just merciless towards Thatcher Demko. It was incredible. And apparently in Toronto, the background noise that they had playing was so loud that it drowned a lot of that out. Okay. So I guess it's become this type of art, you know, in the in-arena presentation where whoever's running it, they have to find this healthy balance. And, you know, some baseball teams have certainly done it, and they've taken feedback from the players and the coaches and stuff like that. I'm sure there has to have been some in the hockey side of things, but selfishly, you guys, I, Greg's, I think you would attest to this too. I hope that they don't crank it up to the point where we can't hear what's being said between the benches, because that is some of the best stuff that I have heard covering this game for the last 12, 13 years.
Talking with Tom Gazzola for the Chronicles. And Tom, you know, interesting, you know, we know what's going on with the U.S. Open, and Novak Djokovic is one of the, you know, the biggest stars. And he was disqualified after hitting a line judge with a ball. He was frustrated and kind of tapped it away. You know, in your opinion, is this the right move for them? When I say them, the U.S. Open, to remove him for that, you know, that I guess that accident that happened between him and the line judge?
Yeah, the incident, if you will, study. But I mean, he's put together a pretty bad 6 months. You know, the breakaway, like, union he's tried to form, and a lot of the tour players have basically rejected it. They're not on board with it. He threw that tournament together that basically didn't pay any attention to any COVID regulations and safety protocols. And, you know, they ended up having a bunch of positive tests. And remember, he tested positive and then his wife tested positive. And then, I think he came, did he come back with a negative? Something like that. And his parents lashed out at the media. I think he's had some stuff about anti-vaxxing, and he's really just disparaging his own image, and he's a true champion. Like, he is one of the best tennis players of all time, and he could be the best tennis player of all time. He's still relatively young, and he could win a bunch more majors, and I just think his public image has looked bad. I don't think by any means he tried to smoke that line judge in the neck.
No, he barely, like, it was, now, it's by the rules of tennis, not supposed to do it, right?
Right.
And that's, now, you watch that, you see his reaction, he, you know what, he didn't put much mustard on it, it was like a little underground thing, and obviously it probably surprised her, you know, a little bit. It seems, you know, they're under rules recklessly or dangerously hitting balls, and he didn't really have any complaints, because it's kind of in the rule book, right?
Yeah.
And she's fine. Like, I kind of thought she melted a little bit, if I'm being completely honest. Like, oh,
well,
my.
I think it hit her in the throat. I got
it hit her in the throat. Yeah.
Well, I understand that it hit her in the throat, but, like, ball just hit you there, and maybe it scared you more than anything else. But I don't, like, guys have done that. Girls have done that hundreds of times. Usually they just, where they go hit it, where they see where they're hitting it, and it doesn't hit anyone, and no one even.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't like it was, like you saw the other day, the guy picked one up and just crushed it into the second deck.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's no fans there.
Yeah, that's
right.
Different.
Right. So, I understood the ruling of it. That's the tennis rule. You're not allowed to do it. But I definitely don't think, like, I saw some people trying to say, oh, yeah, you know what? This ruins his reputation. Like, trust me. In 2 months, no one's even remembering. They're going to remember Djokovic is a great tennis player. And yes, by one time, he did get kicked out of the U.S. Open.
Right. And they could have taken away a point or a game. And remember Shapovalov in a tournament a few years ago before he made it to the men's tour, smoked the ump? He just crushed the ball, smoked an ump in the face. That got him disqualified. That was way more egregious than what Djokovic did. But maybe like their tolerance of him played into that decision where they said, you know what, we're disqualifying you for that infraction, instead of saying, all right, we're going to take away a game or even a point. That might have played into it, just kind of like to send him a message. But you're right. I don't think there was any intent to hit her in the throat. But it's just, it looks bad on him, and it's a string of poor judgment, I think, on his part. But in terms of intent, no, I don't think he tried to hurt her and hit her directly in the throat, cause her to maybe lose her breath for a couple of moments. Absolutely not.
Tommy, have yourself a good one, and bone up on your karting skills. Yeah. And next time we'll get you invited. Okay,
guys, I'm like Super Mario on the kart track, so be ready. Okay,
you're about the same size of him. I would agree with that. Oh, hi-yo, hi-yo.
Whoa.
Too easy.
I love you too.
Too easy. I'll chat with you tomorrow.